Coming up on this episode, you're about to get infected with our discussion of
The Walking Dead.
It's time to rant. Welcome to this episode of Rambling About Notable Topics, or Rant. I'm your host, Kyle Cicilloni, and today I'm joined by
Charles McHale
and Mark Dillman, infected and in quarantine at a distant location.
What an appropriate way to invite you to this episode from very far away and not even whatsoever close to us. Yeah, so, well, welcome, gentlemen. So today is a topic that I've been wanting to do a rant about, because it's a very interesting show. Today we're going to be talking about The Walking Dead, specifically just the show in general, and we'll also talk about the season premiere, which premiered Sunday, this past Sunday, and now we're in the mid-season. We just started the mid-season of season 3, which we'll be doing, and then, yeah, so we'll talk about it probably later on down the road, too, if it when it inevitably continues to, like, 13 seasons. So anyway, I just wanted to start doing this right now about the newest episode. Or actually, no, let's talk about just the show in general quick. And I know we all have relatively different or similar opinions about this show. So, Mark, why don't you tell us about your history, like how you feel about the show in general and like your experience with it so far. Just real quick.
Okay, sure thing. So I was actually really anticipating the pilot. So I watched from the very first episode pretty regularly. You know, I always caught up within a few days of any episodes that I had missed. But in general, I was always a little under-enthused by how the show was actually executed. I think that its dark moments are executed relatively well, and when things are brutal, the show is very, very interesting and compelling and believable, but it really doesn't do some of the more dramatic and heartfelt moments very well, and I guess we'll talk about maybe where we feel that comes from, but in general, I feel like the show sort of doesn't quite live up to its potential on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I feel like the best way to describe this show, I think, is a missed opportunity. I feel like that's the way I feel about it myself, because it's a cool idea. Obviously, I wouldn't say it's gimmicky almost, but it is definitely playing on the fact that, you know, the supernatural stuff is such a popular thing nowadays, whether, you know, regardless of what medium it's in. And this is really the first show to hit the zombie aspect of that genre in such a serious way and in such a series of a way. You know what I mean? Like, there's been movies and stuff, but, like, there's really been no, you know, dramatic television show. So I think that's really what this show is gaining momentum from, is that specific idea, though. Chuck, what do you think?
Well, I'm pretty much on the same page. You know, it's a very similar opinion. You know, I just remember I got into it kind of recently, and I started watching the first season. I went through the whole entire first season, and you know, it just feels like every time that something good is happening, something bad has to mess it all up. Some type of a plot hole or something really dumb that happens that's very, very disappointing about it. And then when we get to the second season, I watched maybe like an episode or two, and it just went downhill from there. It was just boring. I couldn't even get into it. And maybe I should watch more of it to talk about it, but I really can't stomach it.
Yeah. There's a lot of moments on this show that I really like. Specific moments, though. And they're so few and far between that it angers me more than anything. And especially a lot of just the I'll just go out and say that the writing in this show is really sloppy, and it's really not all that interesting a lot of the time. And I like to put it this way. I mean, obviously, I know that the whole idea of the show is that, you know, it is zombies and it is like the post-apocalyptic like Earth. But if you take the zombie aspect out of this show, it's a really terrible like soap opera like ish drama that like is really uninteresting. And it would be a horribly I would shudder at if I had to watch this show like if there were no zombies in it.
I still shudder.
Yeah, even when there's no zombies. Yeah, so when there's no zombies attacking people, they're not talking about zombies. It's really boring. No. Real quick, I want to talk about the fact that they've had so many problems in production with this show. Not lots of problems, but they've had a lot of like with the writing. I know Frank Darabont was the initial like executive producer on this show, and he was the guy, obviously, did like Shawshank Redemption, and you know, he's a pretty big name, and people were really excited when he signed on to do this, which was initially my excitement, which was what made me excited that this show was going to be, you know, produced by Frank Darabont, and he's going to be a part of it, and then it came out, and I think it was like midway through the first season or something when he like left, and then Glenn Mazzara was called in, and he was hired, and he replaced him. And he became one of like the helming the shows. He's like the show's front runner, more or less. And he went through, and now he just left after producing the last couple episodes of season 3. So everything you're going to see now through season 3 is all Glenn Mazzara stuff. And then they're going to have a new people for the next season after this. So obviously, so there's some sort of back and forth between. I'm not sure if it's within the crew or if it's with AMC. And from what I read, there was an article telling how Glenn Mazzara had different views on where the show should go, compared to what AMC thinks that what direction the show should go. So obviously, there's a lot of you know, some quarrels and disagreements in this show, which you could definitely tell, at least for me, from a viewer standpoint, that it's a lot of. There's the aim. It's a very aimless show, and the characters' motivations especially reflect that the writing is just not all precise, and it's not all concentrated on enough. Do you know what I mean? Like they kind of almost wander around the, mm-hmm. the people's intentions.
They're just kind of there.
Yeah, like people's intentions kind of wander and change, and characters' motivations are constantly being. Like a lot of these characters are hypocrites more or less right. Most of the time, which I know that sometimes creates drama, like, you know, in itself as a show, but when it's like happening like over and over again with like some of the same characters, Lori
and Andrea, for instance, out of it.
Yeah. Then it just, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I would definitely say that a lot of the characters' actions are really undermotivated. I think that maybe a counter argument might be, you know, like this is a totally new and different world. It's anarchic. People are trying to sort of readjust their morals to fit with the new requisites for survival. But overall, I still think that the backbone of a show is being able to look back over a character arc and say, this is what caused this shift in opinion. This is what caused this shift in opinion. And to be honest, I sort of find that characters are actually acting in the opposite of their best interest, or acting in the opposite of the group's interest, right, and their loved one's interest often. And I'm not sure that is good writing.
No.
At the end of the day.
No, it really is. I blame personally the majority of the fault on the writing staff in this particular show, because I mean, that's obviously not the most important thing, but it certainly is a hell of one of the most, like, you know, if the thing that kind of directs where the show's right. going and like how right. everything formulates. And and initially a lot of the acting was pretty horrible. A lot of these characters really came along. Like Carl kind of came along a little bit. He still has a long way to go. And you know, but like overall, like Rick and everybody, they definitely they definitely kind of fell into their own. They became their own. They really took on these characters a lot better, especially in like season 3 compared to season 1. If you look back at like season 1 and you watch some of the stuff, it's pretty gruesome. Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to watch, because you're like, Jesus, like this is what I watched. Like, this is how it started.
Right. I actually used to wish that Carl would somehow fall behind and get caught and eaten to death by walkers, because his acting was so bad. But you know what? To his credit, he really has kind of developed a bit of a signature thing. Like, now he has this great dead-eye stare. So, like, when he's, you know, he's often taking on the roles that his father would, because his father is either incapacitated with grief or whatever. And when he's looking at people that they're holding prisoner or under observation, he really has this great expression of, like, a thousand-yard stare, as they say. You know, like, when people come back from war, it looks like he's actually seen a lot. So I have to give props to the actor that plays Carl, because he really kind of did manage to muster something from what was originally very little talent.
No, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, like I was saying, the character's motivations is the point I'm trying to make here, that they're underwritten, and they're not they don't make much sense a lot of the times. And especially for Andrea, especially now, I mean, obviously that just for the record, I should have started the episode like this. I should have started the episode like this, that there's spoilers for The Walking Dead for this entire episode. So we're not going to hold back on anything. So if you haven't watched it and you're going to be upset, then too bad. But I think people who are listening to this have seen most of, if not all of the of the show so far.
At least an episode.
Yeah,
two,
I know.
And if they did watch an episode and they loved it, they probably saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
And if not, then they agree with us and they don't really care.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, like Lori and Andrea specifically, their motivations, characters' motivations have been very insincere almost. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the newest episode for a little bit, the one that just aired, the mid-season 3 premiere, which aired this past Sunday. And I'm just going to start by saying that this was the highest rated episode of The Walking Dead to date. There was 12.3 million viewers, which is ridiculous, wow. Compared to only 10.9 million from the October, the season 3 premiere back in October. So 12.3 million for, you know, a zombie show, that a zombie sucks. Drama on on AMC is a pretty big deal. And that takes away a lot of viewers from, like, you know, like network TV shows, like, you know, Big Bang Theory and stuff like that.
And girls, ha ha ha, yeah. Playing in the same time slot.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, anything that takes time away from the Big Bang Theory and shows like that, I would usually give props to. But in this situation, it's just, I think it's impossible.
Yeah. But, okay. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Okay. So I guess one thing that I could say about the high ratings is that they do kind of put the fix in and manage their seasons very cleverly to kind of differentiate the show from the pack of normal Sunday shows. So
yeah,
the winter run of a lot of really highly rated shows recently ended. And I think that The Walking Dead went on this very purposeful hiatus to avoid some competitive TV seasons.
Well, this is a whole other entirely different argument that I might write an article about the way that these TV shows are now taking hiatuses during the winter break. Because of they're trying to basically hit like sweeps on both ends of one season instead of, you know, trying to hit them with separate seasons. It creates more viewers. They get time off to kind of work on things. They come back. And honestly, the fact that they're cutting the season in half and spending so many months away from the show does not, obviously, as we see here with the numbers, does not affect the show whatsoever. Right. In fact, it makes it better.
No, right. Yeah.
Well, at least in this instance. So.
Right. So I think that speaks to kind of the marketing aspect. So I'm not surprised at the huge numbers. What I am surprised at is the audacity of the decision makers of the show, both the producers and the writers, into thinking that we remember every little detail during these long hiatuses. Because my first impression of this episode is, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Like I knew that they attacked, you know, the governor, and Michonne had that standoff with him. But when they finally cut into this episode, I just felt like there was a huge disjunction, because all of a sudden the governor was presiding over this blood sport battle between Daryl and Merle, and I really couldn't recreate what led up to this.
Yeah, there was a lot of just kind of like back and forth, like running around during the end of the half of last season, right before this premiere started. And I appreciate that, like, they left off, like, they started off this episode exactly, like, the exact moment where last episode left off, and I actually read a few, like, people's, like, Facebook status and stuff like that, where they're like, yeah, like, it left off right where it was, and, like,
yeah,
I disagree, because, it came right back into it, and, like, oh, and I'm, like, spending this whole time trying to, like, okay, this is what happened, they're here now, and this has happened, instead of just, like, starting the episode off with some other subtle moment of another character or something else like happening that then leads into where the last episode left off.
Right.
It would have been it's not as seamless, but it's more appropriate as a viewer for who hasn't spent time in this world for 3 months or whatever.
Definitely. And, you know, it's a little bit more artful. The transition is more easing. And to be honest, I felt that the discontinuity wasn't necessarily in the timeline, but in the motivations. Like, if they're still under siege, why is the governor bothering to host this blood sport, which obviously created a weak link, because then they continued to attack and finally ended up liberating Daryl and Merle. So, yeah. You know, why was the governor so stupid? That's what I was thinking at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, I agree.
Why did he not, like, secure his town before he had this weird, almost Van Damme-esque street fight with burning barrels and everything?
And about that, it's really funny the way, like, how badass they try to make him look, as he's just like walking through while everybody's fighting.
Yeah, and like he can see anything with one eye, with a bunch of smoke and people screaming and mass panic going
on. And he's just walking slowly, just he has that eye that he's like, oh, I'm going to kill somebody. And it was just so uneventful. And then like a zombie comes up and he doesn't even look and he shoots the zombie in the head. And like it's supposed to be like that scene, like, wow, that's really badass that he did that. But I couldn't help but just laugh, really.
And also, we'll get to the point. Also, Mark mentioned that when the Dixon brothers, Daryl and Merle, kind of run off together, and we see them, you know, everything escapes, blah blah blah, whatever. You remember that part? And you know, they're talking to Rick, and Daryl's like, "Yeah, I gotta leave." But it's so stupid because obviously, I mean, we know how, you know, terrible of a person Merle is, obviously. Yeah. I mean, we've seen him.
And he just doesn't stop. Time he never stops.
After time
you
again.
You think he's going to learn.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
Nobody learns. Like, how do you not? Like, I'm glad Glenn actually.
There's no development to his character at all. He just stays the same terrible person as he always will.
And I'm glad Glenn, like, sees that. And he's, like, trying his hardest to, you know, not let Merle back in. And then, but it's like, you know, Daryl's a. Was one of the most interesting characters until I think kind of this moment when he decides to just run off with his brother. You know what I mean? Like, regardless of how many, he's like, yeah, he's my brother. You know, I've spent every waking minute with him or whatever for, you know, how many years up until this point. But dude, I mean, obviously your brother's a piece of shit.
Right.
So, I mean, I think, and you've become a decent person, even though I will say the way he acted in the beginning of the season, Daryl's definitely come a long way since then, and he's like a fan favorite, blah, blah, blah. So he's definitely going to come back at some point. Something's going to happen, or his brother's going to double cross him, and he's going to shoot him with an arrow, or something stupid. But,
I have a couple of theories on this front. First of all, before I get into some of those about what's going to happen with Daryl and Merle, I do want to just complain about something in this episode, and that's that Rick has really shown his true colors as the worst leader ever in this episode.
Yeah, pretty much.
He did not make one good decision, in my opinion, this whole time.
But I think I don't think that's on accident. I think that's on purpose as far as the way the show's supposed to go.
He might be, like, losing his mind and everything.
Yeah, right. You definitely see that at the end of the episode.
Like, obviously.
I mean, that's been slowly happening, and that, actually, that's a good thing. And they definitely have been showing that very well. Like, they've been doing a pretty good job of showing, like, the descent into madness of Rick.
Right.
And how he's not basically going to be able to be capable of being a leader for this team anymore. So, and they're definitely doing a good job at that, so.
But, well, I actually sort of disagree that they're doing a good job. I think in the last scene where he was confronting the new arrivals at the prison, you know, Sasha et al., I think that they did a good job there of kind of weaving together his grief over Lori's death and his guilt at being so cold to Lori before she passed away, and his inability to be a leader. However, in the Daryl and Merle scene, he really was not so much suffering from some sort of stress as he was just incompetent. So he knows that they're imminently under attack at the prison, yet he didn't even try to strike a deal either with the new arrivals at the prison or with Daryl and Merle.
Yeah.
Even a temporary one, just to defend the prison and repel the governor. And then he could say, you know, go your own way after that if you want. But let's find some sort of common ground so you can help us defend the prison. And from then, we'll give you a share of supplies. We'll give you vehicles, whatever. He refuses to barter. That's half of – I realize that doesn't necessarily make for compelling dramatic conversation. But it really goes a long way to believability in this world where – decisions and accord are so hard to come by. So it just, that scene drove me crazy.
It's stupid because one of his only defenses against that, against Herschel asking to let these people be part of the group at the end of the episode, when he's like, we tried that with Tomas, or that stupid other prisoner that, like, ended up, like, trying to kill them, which I might say might have been the weakest point of this season, and maybe one of the weakest parts of this series in general. It was such a forced moment. Anyway, also, I just want to mention real quick that when when they're all quarreling in the woods, when Daryl is going to leave and Merle's being a jerk, and they just left after getting Daryl out of that fight. Like, Rick hits Merle with, like, the butt of his gun and knocks him out.
Oh, yeah.
Did
yeah.
anyone notice the sound effects that occurred when he hits him? It was like a video game. It was like, psh! Like, when he hit him, I was like, wait, did he just hit him with the gun, or did he, like, freaking, I don't know, what was that? Yeah, like, did he stab him? Yeah, like, what was that noise? It was ridiculous. Right. It was a ridiculous sound effect. I started laughing. I just started, no one was around me. I was like, did anyone else hear that?
I think that moment, which did stick with me with this episode, actually just captures something really important about the tenor of the show that people are never willing to admit. And that's that it's, like, up to its eyebrows in TV tropes.
Yeah,
like,
dude. Oh, my God,
instant,
yeah.
The instant knockout in the butt of the gun, like, this show really isn't trying to tackle the things that I want tackled in a zombie TV show.
It doesn't try anything new, honestly. Right.
And that's, like, a zombie TV show versus a zombie movie has the opportunity to explore the minute details of the lives of survivors.
Right.
And this show manages to both waste that opportunity and also really never advance the plot. It's really, it's a miracle how little happens in this show.
Yeah, I really do.
It's a miracle that the ratings, right?
Yeah, I know. And again, I'm saying, dude, it's because it's kind of it's the gimmick of the idea that it's a zombie TV show. And that's the only reason why this show is remotely popular.
The thing about it that really upsets me is, like, they just don't keep it simple. And there's, like, there's so many golden rules.
But sometimes it's funny because sometimes they keep it too simple.
at
certain parts, too.
But like, the parts that they need to keep simple, they just overcomplicate and make, like, this whole mess of stuff that just doesn't make any sense. Like, when the brothers, like, when they depart, like, they were just saved by a bunch of people that went out of their way. They could have gotten killed and to save them. And it's like a bonding moment. It's like, it's a life lesson type of thing. And you would think that they would just all get together and be like, oh, well, thank you so much. And that's just something that really is supposed to happen in that moment. And then they were just like, oh, we're going to go. See you, bye.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. And also during that moment, during like the raid or whatever you want to call it towards the beginning of this episode when they rescue Daryl, there's a moment where he like grabs his crossbow like off this dude who's just like holding it like up for him to almost grab, like inadvertently just to like have him take it, like as an actor, like the choreography was like he's holding the crossbow up so that like Daryl can like sweep in and like take it and then like shoot a zombie quick, and this dude's just like, it's just like some black dude that's on the other team, I'm assuming, I don't know, there's so many forgettable like side characters in this show, which I might add, especially in this episode, the background acting, if you watch it again, is freaking horrific. Dude, it's so bad.
It reminds me of a scene on Logan's Run where they blatantly show a guy waiting for his cue to walk in, and he's standing there waiting, and then he walks in, and that's the scene.
But yeah, like just his cross, it's like he's just kind of holding it out there, and Daryl like swoops in, like grabs it, like spins around, like I was like, oh dude, is he like, I don't, who is that guy? When did he get the crossbow? Is he? Why are there so many arrows all of a sudden? Like, how did this happen? Anyway, because Daryl only ever had like 3 arrows this entire show, practically. Which they did a pretty decent job of keeping the continuity for him, but now he's got like more. I don't know. And also the fact that Andrea, oh god, she bothers me so much as a character. Sorry, she just fired. I get fired up when I have to talk about her. Her motivations are just retarded. How is she still trying to why is she still there? What is keeping her in this town? She's found out that, let's see what she's found out about the governor far.
Oh yeah.
Okay, jeez. So one, he's keeping a zombie like daughter girl like captive in his like bedroom. He's got a bunch of zombie floating heads like quarantined in like a freaking aquarium in his office. He's got
a crazy notebook with just tallies and stains.
Yeah, he's just like a Jack Torrance-esque notebook with just like random crap written in it. He's got this like sidekick dude who like follows him to wherever the earth and the ends of the earth, and they perform like weird experiments on like zombies and stuff, which I understand they're trying to like, you know, figure out like a way to prevent it or get away from it, whatever. Anyway, and then he's got like this like troop of evil like posse that he has with him that goes and murders like U.S. military people, man. Which
That don't like, get me started. Yeah, on that. I know. Wait, that... actually, no. Get me started for that for rant because that's what we're all about, people. No, but seriously.
Yeah, that was a terrible moment when when they show that like
those people were like, I don't know, like 3 football fields away with like without sniper rifles and they still took a ball.
And they're in an armored like tank.
Yeah, and these are trained infantry units.
I know. Anyway, and he's also now freaking. Tried to kill Michonne, and then
now she also knows.
And then he shoots this dude like in the middle of everybody else, like episode.
We missed another point that Andrea found out this week that he was keeping 2 of her friends who she didn't.
Oh yeah,
know
that's right. I was about to get to that. Yeah. So yeah, he's keeping that. He tortured Glenn and Maggie, and he knew that they had like that they'd just gotten Daryl. He knew all this stuff, but yet Andrea's still like. Here.
Yeah.
Like, trying to... Like, why... There's no reason for her to be here. There's no reason for her to be around.
I haven't watched, like the past... like, the 3 episodes before this last one. Is she, like, sleeping with him or something?
Yeah, she's sleeping with him, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other real, like... Yeah. I can kind of see where she's... Like, they kind of did a little foreshadowing moment in this episode where he's, like, watching her, like, kind of rally the town up, that kind of thing. But there's no reason for her to still be around there. She knows her friends are around.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You think she would go do that?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. There's no reason for this woman to do anything.
She's
does.
Governor whipped. Whoops.
Yeah.
So, on the subject of Andrea, I think that while she's probably my least favorite character still alive in the show, I do think that maybe there's a little bit more underlying consistency, but I have to string together a bunch of really minute points about her character. One, I kind of believe, just in general psychology, and I might get flamed for this, but there are certain women, and they're not necessarily unintelligent women. They just, for whatever reason, gravitate towards the most evil guy in the room and fall for them. So she's consistently done that. She had sex with Shane.
Girls just love douchebags.
She had sex with Shane and now the governor. So that point... you know, it's kind of funny that she's a bit of a lightning rod for the antagonist.
Like, I understand what they're trying to do with this character. She's, like, the rebel kind of girl, you know what I mean? Like, she's kind of her own thing. You know, but, like,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. In the grand scheme of things, she's just another terribly written character.
Right. Yeah, she is. She's sort of like a jellyfish. She's just all the motion of the ocean, and she doesn't really have any impetus of her own.
Yeah, they're really trying to push her story, too. And... I thought when this season started, when you find out like she's with Michonne, and you see at the end of last season Michonne like saves or whatever, I thought that was going to be an interesting duo, and then they're split apart pretty early on in the beginning of the half of
they're
the
really
season.
Tight too, like they're really close.
Yeah, because they spent like an entire winter together, and she like saved Andrea because she was like I don't know hypothermia or some shit. Anyway, But yeah, let's talk about Michonne quick, because this is another terribly missed opportunity.
Don't
of a
get
character.
Me started. Oh, wait, she, do get me started, because this started. Is rant.
Let's rev that engine. Anyway, right. So Michonne, really cool idea. Hugely popular fan of, like, people are fans of her from, like, the comic book and stuff. So, like, when they first announced her, everyone, like, went crazy. And then they bring her in, and she has, like, these 2 zombies with her with the jaws cut off, and she has them on chains.
Which I might want to add, that's an awesome
idea. It's a really cool idea. And then it's just kind of thrown away. And she's just, now she's known as that girl with the sword and the 2 zombies.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Merle, even to this episode, this newest one, that's still how he refers to her.
Right.
So, it's a cool idea. And then... She's just – I understand she's like a very guarded individual. She's very held back. She's very cautious.
Mm-hmm.
But at what point does she ever want to say like thank you or I'm sorry? Like there's no – she never –
word.
Yeah.
Just a word.
She just never – she never has an emphasis on anything. She never So like – oh god. Like I don't even know how to talk about it.
It's another thing to add to this, I think – you know, it's a really good idea for the graphic novel for her to have a sword and just have a sword, and that's really badass for a graphic novel. But like, for a television show, when you're watching a television show, like you kind of want a little bit more reality out of this. And she's just holding a sword the whole time. It's like trying to really implement the idea of it being a comic in a television show where it just doesn't work. I mean, just give her some type of a sidearm or something to give it a little bit more sense.
Yeah, you know? And that's also along that same point, how the success of the Telltale game, the Walking Dead game that had just carded, the one that has like the 5 episodes, mm-hmm. The kind of the point and click game. Yeah. The success of that game has now been brought up that whether the show is going to take notes from that, almost like going to go in that kind of direction with certain stories.
A video game
from that game.
Sincerely, I hope it does, because the story of that game was better than the TV series.
But I mean, this show has been following this. I mean, not to a T, but been following the story of a graphic novel, which is regarded as a really good graphic novel.
Right.
And you've seen what they've done with this so far, mm-hmm. and there's only so much you can do with with this show based on what they're trying to
So if they start trying to take an idea from a video game too, like that's two things that they could ruin, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
Because of the nature of the video game, they won't really be able to directly port it because it's already in episodes. It pretty much unfolds at the same pace as a Walking Dead episode. It's actually a little bit quicker and a little bit more tightly written.
Right.
So they're not going to directly port it, but I think this comes to a question which I thought of midway through the second season, which is, would this show be better off if it switches its focus to different groups of survivors? There's another show on TV right now that's also wildly popular, American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And that's the route that they've taken. And I'm not saying that they're similar shows or even comparable, but they did a really interesting thing in totally changing the plot, keeping certain actors and keeping elements of their cast similar, but totally changing the plot every season. And I think that's really brilliant. And it's probably something that would have made The Walking Dead better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Because I thought we still, it's 3 seasons later, have never wrapped up or heard anything about the initial, like, the black dude and his son.
Oh, yeah.
Finds out in the first season. That never went anywhere. And they can't. And the fact is that it wouldn't have been. It would be okay if they did that and then they ended it and that was it. But throughout the first season, like, he tries to, like, radio him a few times.
Yeah.
And, like, they give you that sliver of, like, hope that, like, you know, like, whereas they're leading you on to something that I don't think. I think they were planning on it. But I think with all the changes, like the writing stuff, and like it's just the way that the show that was being directed, I don't know if they're gonna go back to that. You know what I mean?
I'm wondering what these writers think when they're writing this. Like, do they really think like, wow, this was really a good idea?
And I think more often than not, instead of writing forward for a specific goal towards the end of stuff,
mm-hmm.
I think this show, to me, what it feels like is that they're writing themselves out of corners most of the time, rather than writing towards accomplishing
obvious.
A goal down the road, if that makes sense.
Like, they get to the end of, like, the script or whatever, and they're like, oh, wait, this doesn't make sense. Right. Oh, okay, well, let's just put this character
like,
in
instead
here.
Of writing for, like, a goal far down the road, they write towards smaller goals
mm-hmm.
that are closer to be accomplished. And by accomplishing them, they're not working on as much stuff in the general aspect of where the show's going. Right. They're just working on these little moments.
They're just burning themselves.
Yeah.
I also think that begets another sin in writing, which is I think they think up a character action, which essentially would be a plot twist, something that we sort of would expect the character to act one way and then act another.
Right.
They think of that in advance and usually backload that at the end of an episode.
Right.
And then they try to create dialogue that makes that twist sort of, you know, like obscurely foreshadows that twist in dialogue. And it's one reason that the dialogue just feels so weird and out of nowhere and flat.
A lot of the dialogue in this show is pretty bad.
Yeah. And a huge irony is that The Walking Dead is on the same channel as Mad Men, which I think has some of the best dialogue ever.
Yeah. And Breaking Bad, some of the best writing ever done in a TV show.
It's sort of like the black swan of AMC, but it's also the revenue producer of AMC.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. It's what brings in everything.
Yeah.
Also, real quick, before we wrap up, I want to mention how they only ever have one African-American male ever at a time in this show. So we have T-Dog for the most of, like, the series,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, he gets killed, and they bring in this dude from the jail the guy from jail, and he's part of it for a few episodes, and then he dies, and the same episode that he dies, Tyrese comes in, and Tyrese is now, like, the main, like, black dude, so they're only ever, like, this is like an ongoing joke always, like, on threads on the internet and stuff, and There's only ever one black dude.
So these are never my favorite conversations to have. One, I'm not really qualified to talk about like black experience because I'm a white guy from the Northeast. two, also, I think it's a little played. Like, you can sort of complain about race in just about anything. But I think that especially this show, being in the South, does have a really weird relationship to race. And I don't know, like, that sort of circling back on Michonne, her character sets really weirdly with me. I think it's they don't intend to do this because I think they've gone to her badass well one too many times, and so her weird silence kind of to me almost seems like a type of savagery, and to choose a black woman to have to be that savage is a little bit weird.
Yeah,
but also like you know like. It's funny because the show does have sort of weird racist tendencies and kind of favors, like I was saying, like a quotient for black people.
Oh, no, absolutely. There's definitely a lot of, like, they play on the race card.
Oh, right. I remember even on the very beginning of the season, the first season, where one of the brothers, was it Daryl that got tied? That got his arm cut off?
Yeah,
or was it,
yeah. But, okay. I mean, that's part of, I mean, they're playing on that dude's character.
Right.
But, I mean, that's fine. But in the grand scheme of the show itself.
Okay,
it's,
yeah.
It's playing
the show itself also seems
I'm picking that up now. I know what you mean.
Like, the Hispanic Tomas dude who, you know, he's, like, the inmate who's, like, a bad, you know. Like, it's...
That's the strange thing.
And then T-Dog, like... Just the fact that his nickname is T-Dog, like, seriously, come on, dude. Like,
that's true, yeah.
Oh, God.
So I think it's funny that we're supposed to believe that Merle is evil because he's racist, but then the show also handles race in such a weird way.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you would
that's
sort,
a very
you
good point.
Sort of
I never
think,
thought about that. Yeah.
You sort of think, like, okay, so civilization has fallen to our feet. Now we can finally meet each other on a basis of like our motivations and on a like a face to face basis.
Right.
Why does this weird race thing still have to persist? And I can understand it. I can understand it with Merle, but like
I understand his character, but just in general in the show, like the way they choose to do certain things and how they portray certain characters and how they introduce and exclude certain characters with you know, depending on their race and their kind of their prejudice almost in a certain way. It's weird. Also, real quick, I wanted to mention how they're rerunning the series in black and white on AMC.
No, they are not. Are you kidding me?
They're from the start, and they're making such a big push. They were pushing this back when season 3 was still airing, like back in October. They were pushing. I don't know if they did it then, and they're doing it again now. Anyway, but they're pushing that they're like rerunning the AMC's The Walking Dead in black and white from the beginning, and it's exactly how the promo goes. And I'm just like. Who cares? Like, what? It adds nothing to the show. So they took all the saturation out of the color of this TV
my
show.
My mind is blown for the day.
It makes
completely
no sense.
No,
it doesn't.
What
is black? First of all, what does black and white have to be? What does black and white do to this show to make it any different?
Okay,
it's not a scary show. They're not making it that you know. It's trying to be like old black and white scary because first of all, the show's not written that way.
No.
It's not created that way.
Mm-mm.
So it's not going to do any of that.
So,
and also. Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
Okay, so I sort of have a theory about that. I think it's definitely silly. I think it's sort of a conciliatory hand to hardcore zombie fanboys that like Romero and everything.
I guess, but it's not played out the same way. And you know what I mean? And the fact that it's just a zombie show,
right?
That's the only device. That's why they're using this device of making it black and white. That's the only thing.
But you know that the fans of the show are just going to be like,
they're going to love it.
This is awesome.
And
what a great idea. This is genius. Why didn't they do this in the first place?
I know.
And it's not like that at all.
I can't wait for all the people to be like, oh, dude, The Walking Dead in black and white is so much better than it was in color.
Yeah,
I can see that happening already. They'll be like, oh, yeah, so right, man. It's
awesome
so much scarier, and the zombies are so much cooler.
Awesome direction the producers thought to go in. Oh, brilliant, man.
This actually leads me to a moment in this week's episode, which was striking because so it was in the prison when the new arrivals, like Sasha and Tyrese, were going to bury their deceased comrade, and there was actually a really beautiful, well-composed shot in the prison, and I was like, wow, that shot's beautiful. And then I sort of thought about it and I said, wait, the reason I think that shot is so beautiful is because well-composed shots are so few and far between in this show, really.
Yeah, they really are.
Like, so in black and white, I feel like it's just going to suffer even worse
for being such a zombie apocalyptic like show that like this is an idea of like, you know, that the fact that they're in a barren wasteland almost of a, you know, especially like when they were in Atlanta and on the farm. You think that the shots that they would have used, like introductory shots and certain things, they would have shown more landscape moments. Yeah, like,
more establishing.
Yeah, like establishing shots of locations and just like the fact, like showing where they are and like what this world has become. Everything's so tight shots. In the show. Everything's shot so just intimate. Like, not like real close intimate, like, you know, right up in your face, but like it's like medium shots with, you know, just showing the people. Then
medium is the widest that they go.
Yeah, like there's never any.
Establishing is ideal so that we could get that feeling of like where they are, where.
Like the honestly, environment, the Breaking climate, Bad whatever. Does that so well, and it's in New Mexico, which is a very you know, scenic area, gives you such a sense of where this show takes place and the feeling of this show, and it just gives you it establishes so much more compared to this show, where like you would want to see like these really wide shots of like a town that's just completely.
Just wiped out,
and you see like some zombies kind of wandering in the distance.
Yeah, or just like an open shot of like the plains or something, showing that that's kind of like the area that they're like aiming towards.
And they try and do that sometimes, but it's not. They don't.
It's not executed.
Yeah,
well.
It's not executed well. Like if they did it wider, maybe use like a helicopter shot, something.
The helicopter shot would be cool. But that's. I guess we're just getting a little too technical right now. But
I understand it's a character based show.
Yeah,
but I mean, so is Breaking Bad, and they show the scenic shots in that, and
it works to its advantage.
That's really no excuse, and especially it is a character based show, which I think is why it suffers. And they should maybe try to mess with that formula a little bit, make some more visual poetry, kind of just make some more memorable moments. It doesn't matter if you're advancing the character because you haven't made us care about most of the characters yet, anyway.
Right, and that's the thing. A lot of people complain that like everything was so slow in season two, and I appreciate that they're trying to work on character development, but they're not doing it correctly and they're not doing it well. suffers. Like, everything suffers because of that. Because they're sacrificing everything to make this a character-based show.
It's just making it boring and unwatchable.
Right.
Unwatchable.
Yeah.
I always just watch it for the next zombie headshot and I'll continue watching it until it goes off the air.
And can I mention real quick how terrible of a show and how gruesomely gimmicky it is to use the Talking Dead, the talk show that they air after it.
Yeah.
First of all,
the dude is cringingly annoying.
Yes,
the guy who Chris Hardwick who like
in his goddamn
who does it.
Checkered suits. Like,
yeah, it's obviously just a show to continue ratings for the people who love The Walking Dead so much and they can't wait till like next week, so they'll watch more. Of stuff about The Walking Dead, like immediately brilliant ploy because they're banking in on
that. Is the episode of Walking Dead again? Right. So they watch it again. So yeah, they're like, oh, that's what he was talking about.
And there was like 7.7 million viewers for the talk show alone after the premiere of the 12th.
That's insane.
So more than half of the people continued for another hour to watch the Talking Dead show.
Wow.
And it's obviously obviously it's a show about The Walking Dead, so they're not gonna they're not going to pinpoint specific issues or problems with the show. It's like a fanboy show, obviously, so they're not going to talk about things that are, you know, problematic or things that don't work. But, like, and that's fine, you know what I mean? But the fact that – and it's fine that they avoid stuff like that. Like, they don't talk about stuff like that. But the fact that they – when – it doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes they'll talk about things that are problems with the show – as if they're not problems with the show.
Right.
Like, they'll say certain things, like, how good a certain character has become, or, like, how far they've come along. Right. When, in fact, in reality, the show, it's not that whatsoever.
Not that way at all.
And they just kind of make it so – they make it sound like it should be a good idea or that it works in the show because, you know – because Kevin Smith is saying it or because, you know, like, some zombie – some – you know, like Robert Kirkland's there and he's the one saying like, this is a cool idea because, you know, I wrote the book. So listen to me. So I'm the final word on
telling you guys what you should like and what you should.
Exactly. All right. That's exactly what this show does. And it's so silly.
I mean, Kevin Smith, it's really funny that he's on this show because he is also the guy that said that the third Star Wars, AKA, the last of the prequels,
Revenge of the Sith,
was a good movie, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like he's kind of auctioned out his opinions a long time ago.
Yeah.
Not that I still do like his movies. Okay.
No. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I appreciate it, and I yeah, I respect Kevin Smith, but I feel like he's probably getting a little bit of a cut from this, and yeah, also definitely. Not to mention he's being able to push his own show, which is also on AMC, Comic Book Men, in the same time, so he can't not say it's a good show.
Right.
He's just benefit. If anything, he's making it. He's getting more money by pushing more people to his own show. They did that too because they're like, if you noticed, the Comic Book Men starts Thursday. Mm-hmm. They have like a during the next time on The Walking Dead. After that, they did be sure to watch Comic Book Men on Thursday to watch an extended 5-minute preview of next week's episode.
Yeah.
Just to push more people to watch the show.
Exactly.
As if 12.3 million people isn't enough to watch The Walking Dead. They try to get more people to watch this show. So they're just using The Walking Dead to get people to watch other shows on AMC.
I think
Kevin Smith is the mastermind behind all of this because he sells The Walking Dead comics at his comic shop. Then he has a reality TV show on it, and he produces his reality TV show.
Right.
So in the end, I really think Kevin Smith is going to be the winner.
And also,
you know what? I'm okay with that.
And also, not to mention, he does the AMC like Horror Fest thing. He hosts that, which like during Halloween, he like hosts all of, like the horror movies that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So like he's also
pushing that as well.
He's pushing like the horror.
He's pushing
the horror genre, and then you're like, oh hey, that's the guy that was pushing
the horror genre.
That was like doing.
He knows what he's talking about.
The Walking Dead's horror. So put two and two together, baby, and then the light blinks. And,
yep. Yeah.
Which is so funny because
good point.
It sort of shows an underlying anxiety by somebody. I don't know if it's AMC programming or whether it's the producers of the show to put it in a legitimate. In light of legitimate horror, as if it feels like it maybe isn't quite that, as if it's something else. So I don't know. That's sort of just a parting shot, I guess, at it, is that what's up with the weird anxiety of trying to be like a Romero film? Like, I thought you were going to do something different. You're a TV show, after all.
Yeah, seriously. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that about wraps her up for this episode.
Yeah.
I think we'll definitely revisit The Walking Dead. I don't know about the end of next season. At some point, we're going to revisit.
I'm done watching it.
Talking about it.
I can't watch anymore.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. If a lot of crazy stuff happens, we'll do another one sooner. If not, we might wait till next season starts. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes, considering they have another person helming the show now. So it'll probably take off in another direction and have a completely different style. Anyway, if you have any questions about The Walking Dead or comments, or you want to, you know, either suggest a certain idea to us or tell us we're wrong or tell us we're right or whatever, you can email us at ramblingtopics@gmail.com. We have a Twitter, which is @ramblingtopics, whatever, on Twitter. We also have a Facebook page if you just look up AJAZZ Networks. You can also go to ajazznetworks.com, ajazznetworks.com, to see all of our awesome podcasts, including AJAZZ Tech, hosted by Alex, and The Salinor Show, which we'll be producing more episodes of in the coming future. And check out Internet Amazings, which is a really cool video blog that Alex and Brianne do. And also, if you have any comments or anything, you can just comment on any of these episodes on the webpage. There's a comment section. You can leave your name. You don't have to leave a name. You can make up a name, whatever. Leave a comment, whatever you want to do. And be sure to check out all of the other awesome rants that we do via the blog. When you click on Rant, we have an awesome blog section written by Chuck, Mark, and myself, our three of the writers. And, it's good stuff. So, thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in. Yep.
You can also find this episode that you're listening to right now on the website.
Yeah. We're also on iTunes, too. We're on iTunes, and we're on Stitcher, and, so it's good stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
You can find this show and more at AJAZZ Networks. Originally different media for your personal taste.